All right. Good evening again, everybody. I think I saw Flo show up. And hi, Flo. I don't think you got to introduce yourself. Flo's here. This evening, there's going to be three short parts, I hope, to my talk. Sort of a preamble. And then I'll read the koan. And then I'll give some reflections on the koan, which I hope works with the first two. And I just want to warn everybody that the koan I've chosen involves one of the characters cutting off the finger of another one of the characters in the koan. And I was a little worried about that, and then I remembered that Michael had us stepping off 100-foot poles last week. So please take this in the same spirit as last week's adventure. Now, life koans is the theme of our intensive, and my appreciation of that is that there are these koans, these wonderful collections and selections of anecdotes, encounters, stories, family history, stories of our lineage, and that they can shine a light on our practice and on our lives. And I just want to sort of flesh that out a little bit and by saying that it's possible to see that as sort of having two components to it. One would be the circumstances or the situation that we find ourselves in. So if a koan is going to shine some light on our life and practice, then it tends to be on particular aspects of our life, and aspects of our life manifest through the various situations and circumstances of our life. So situations, circumstances, and then there is me in terms of being in that situation or in that circumstance. And I know we're in a non-dualistic tradition that says ultimately there is no separation between inside, outside, self, others, me, situation, circumstances. There's a beautiful way that that's expressed in the meal chant, that for those of you who have chanted the meal chant during Orioki, where it expresses the emptiness of the three wheels of giver, receiver, and gift. So, yes, during Orioki, all of that is just this beautiful, empty expression where there is really no separation. Yes, it's empty. And at the same time, there is a server, so the giver, and what the server represents. There is the gift, which is the soup or the salad or what have you, and there is the receiver. So there are the three parts, and it's important to recognize the roles that each of them play, that the soup can't play the role of the server, and the server can't play the role of the person eating. And so, you know, in that absolute relative realm, back to me and circumstances, there's me and situations. And I'm of the leaning of paying more attention to, and I'll elaborate a bit, on the me part rather than the circumstances. And I'll use a few, an analogy to illustrate that. One of my favorite analogies for Zen practice is art. And when I consider all the different forms of art and art expression and what have you, there are so many situations that artists can find themselves in. So they can be painting, dancing, singing, writing. They can be all these. It's infinite in variety. How many situations that an artist can find themselves in. But then if we shift the focus over to the artist, and the focus then is on the materials or the medium or what have you, that each of the artists has chosen. And given that there are infinite situations, just think of your day today. How many situations did you encounter today? And my guess is a great number. But this practice does a good job of saying, okay, here are the materials, like an artist, that we work with in order to engage, express, create our work. And I find art is a helpful analogy, because our practice of Soto Zen, a lot of Dogen's teachings focuses on expression, as that our practice is an expression of our Buddha nature and an expression of the awakened nature of all things. It is not trying to change me into an enlightened being. It's not trying to change circumstances. It's to express the awakened nature and to honor it through our practice. So there's a lot of focus then on these materials, tools, the medium that we use in order to express, like an artist, our practice. And I quite enjoy so many of the lists that our practice offers us. So we chanted the loving kindness earlier this evening, and there's a beautiful little list towards the end there where it talks about standing or walking, sitting or lying down during all our waking hours. So in terms of what we're working with, well, one thing is waking hours. So if we're asleep, turns out we're not expected or even capable of practicing. So, all right, it's waking hours. That's what I have to work with. And then there are sort of four bodily attitudes of standing or walking, sitting or lying down. And when I think of my day today, just about everything involved me either standing, walking, sitting or lying down. So that's some of the materials that I have to work with in expressing my practice. So then there are other lists like body, speech and mind. So those are also the working materials of our practice. And if we consider joining the two, so we've got standing or walking, sitting or lying down, and then there's focusing on body, speech or mind under those four body attitudes. And then I have to consider my ancient twisted karma, which is expressed through greed, aversion and delusion. So basically, what that, and just to use those three lists, I can then sort of combine those three to sort of reflect on, okay, what situation am I in? Am I in a standing situation where I need to focus on body and I really need to pay attention to my aversion? Or am I in a sitting situation where I need to speak, or speech is important, and under this particular set of circumstances, my delusions might arise? So there are all these fabulous combinations of those factors. You could probably do the math. You could multiply those all out. And the reassuring thing is that it's not infinite. Circumstances and situations, infinite. But thank heaven, we've only got a certain number of combinations of those things that I need to pay attention to. In the same way that if I play the harmonica, I don't need to worry about how to chisel marble. I just need to worry about being able to read sheet music and inhale and exhale and move the gizmo in my mouth. So in our practice, we have that combination. And for the intensive, I'm personally quite invested in body practice. And it's sort of a shift of mind that I'm trying to pay more and more attention to. There's a great teacher at Tassajara who would always remind me whenever I talked with her that Zen is primarily a body practice. And I have to remind myself of that over and over and over again. And so for this intensive, I'm trying to focus on body. And I'm probably not alone in this, but speech is an avenue that can get me into a lot of trouble. So body and speech are the two things that I should pay lots of attention to, and during the intensive I'm trying to bring greater attention to those two things. And the koan to me, addresses those things quite nicely of speech and body. So I will now read the koan, and it is, for those of you familiar, the Mumonkan or the Gateless Gate. This one is a translation and commentary by R.H. Blythe, probably as well known for his haiku work as he is for his Zen work. And I will read, I'm not going to read the whole case, but again, it's the third case of the Mumonkan. I'll just read the first paragraph of it. Whenever he was asked concerning Zen, Gute simply stuck up one finger. At one time, he had an acolyte whom a visitor asked, "What is the essential point of your master's teaching?" The boy just stuck up one finger. Hearing of this, Gute cut off his finger with a knife. As the boy ran out of the room screaming with pain, Gute called to him. When he turned round his head, Gute stuck up one finger. The boy suddenly became enlightened. So I'm sort of attracted to that koan for a number of reasons. One is, I have to please excuse me, that sort of there's some slapstick humor, some sort of boyish humor in there that I'm not adverse to, and it's very memorable. When there's a koan like that, it has a way of sticking with a person like me, and again, it focuses on these notions of speech and body in a few different ways. And I'm just going to interrupt myself there for a second, and that is the question that I'm going to offer. I'm going to offer it now for the breakout sessions, is for you to consider some combination of all those various things of standing or walking, sitting or lying down, body, speech, and mind, greed, aversion, delusion. What combination of those can you find yourself in particularly joyful and easy circumstances that you prefer? Or is there some combination of those that you find particularly challenging or avoidable or what have you? So feel free to stew on that rather than listen to me for the next 15 minutes or so. So I'm going to start with Gute. And I like, one reason I like koans is that I get to sort of, there's so little information here that I can create my own backstories. And yes, I could read about Gute, and there is some history about him and other koans and so on and so forth, but I'm just going to create my own backstory right now. So I consider Gute, he's an old Zen guy, probably the master of the temple, because people are coming to meet him and talk with him, and has been through a lot, and for quite a while has been meeting with students in Dokusan. So there's Dokusan, a very bodily-centric way of communicating with each other, traditionally. And people would keep coming to him, and they probably knew that he would raise a finger. And it makes me think of Norman Fisher, who, when he talks about Dokusan, he often mentions how he never used to like it. And even though he's a master with language in poetry and books and Dharma talks, he never liked, he says he didn't used to like Dokusan. And then he says, until he realized, I'll just do Zazen during Dokusan. And so he does that, and he sort of blurts out the occasional bit of encouragement or wisdom or what have you. And but mostly he's just doing Zazen. And I think when I imagine him and his trajectory, and I think of Gute and his trajectory, it's like at the beginning you feel like you can change something, help somebody, influence them somehow. An old teacher of mine used to say, if he sees somebody leaning to the left, he encourages them to the right. If he sees them leaning to the right, he encourages them to the left. And that used to make sense to me. But then Norman said, when I shared that with him, Norman says, no, actually, our job is just to love people. And so I would imagine with Gute, in his early days, thought, oh, I have to make a difference with people. I have to tell them important things, and I have to change things and influence them in the direction that I think they need influencing. And then he started to think, well, is that really what's happening? If we're all awake, if they're all Buddhas, is that really what I need to do here? And that over time, he just realized that if he just sits with people and maybe smiles, or, you know, because he's got more than just a finger. I imagine him making various faces, but all of them just being encouraging and validating to the people who showed up for Dokusan. So he went through this long process of sorting that out and realized that all he, you know, just to be with people is 93%, and why bother with the other 7? And so maybe the other 7% is just raising his finger. And maybe he would raise it in different ways depending on who was meeting him. And then there's his acolyte, who, while Gute is out of town and meeting, who's very young, as acolytes are, thinks, what's so hard about raising a finger? So when guests and students would come and ask, what is your master's teachings? And he says, well, that's simple. And he raises his finger, and off they go. But that finger is a lot different than Gute's finger. Gute went through so much to come to that finger. Whereas this acolyte is just imitating. So there's the same approach to expression, but coming from very different ways. And you could almost ask, is it appropriate? This is one of the great words of our tradition, is appropriate. Is it appropriate for the acolyte to do that? And if it's just imitation, many would say no. And I think it's worth noting that in this case, Gute doesn't just raise his finger. He does use words. He calls out to his acolyte at one point and is asking about it, and so on and so forth. So he does use language appropriately outside of Dokusan, outside of when people are asking him about Zen. So he realizes the finger doesn't get him everywhere. It's just, this Zen business is really just about being with and being intimate with, and it's beyond words to the point of being beyond words. So that notion of appropriate speech is both a gift and a curse, because anything can be appropriate. I find it very challenging. And the body part, again, here's Dokusan, which is that physical presence of being with somebody. When we sit, when I do Dokusan with Kate or Michael, we sit in Zazen posture. We sit unusually close to each other. And it is this kind of intimacy that is like 81% of Dokusan. And then we have a pleasant conversation that's often helpful, and so on and so forth. So body and that physicality of this life is such a starting point. And I'll just give you a couple of examples for me of those combinations of factors that I find that I appreciate, enjoy, and cherish, and one that I don't. And that is the one that I cherish is being on my bike. I ride a bike a lot, and over the years I've discovered that it's sort of a body mind thing, because biking isn't standing or walking, sitting or lying down. So let's, for the sake of discussion, let's call it walking. So it's a walking mind thing, where by being engaged with the bike in traffic, keeping the body going, knowing where I'm going, being careful, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it occupies my body in such a way that things pop up in my head sometimes that wouldn't have a chance otherwise. It's almost like that part, those sort of alligator functions of my mind are occupied. And those are the ones that are typically yelling at me to smarten up or whatever. So they're occupied by watching out for traffic, for, you know, keeping where I'm going, and da 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 da. And then that frees up some other part of mind that just says, well, consider this. And I go, where did that come from? And it's usually quite either entertaining or sort of inspiring, or a possibility, what have you, because body and that part of my mind were busy. I compare it to old sitcoms where the wife is going into labor in their apartment and they can't get to the hospital, and the husband is sent off to boil water and get towels. And it's not that they need boiling water and towels, it's just keep him busy and out of the way so that the important stuff can happen. And he thinks he's doing important things, but he's not. He's just out of the way. And then let the important people do the important things. So same thing on my bike. So that's one, that's a combination of, let's call it, and it happens on walks too, so we'll say walking. So walking and mind, and that combination I find very valuable. And the challenging part is just about any bodily posture and talking. And we meet for coffee on Saturdays, and lately we walk along the river. And I love talking. I love language. I feel like it's kind of a medium for this sort of spontaneous art form at times, and that's not really always appropriate. And so it can get me in trouble, and it can disappoint me where I miss really beautiful opportunities, not just Saturdays, but any old time. I miss very rare, beautiful opportunities by actually paying close attention to where I am and what I'm doing. And I was meeting with somebody the other day outside, and I noticed at one point I'm slouching and relaxing on this at this table, and and, you know, with my feet up in some posture or another. And afterwards I realized, you know what, my speech sort of reflected that posture I was assuming, so that it might be helpful for me to pay attention to my posture if I'm going to say anything. So those are just two examples for me when it comes to, again, those combinations of body speech and mind, greed, aversion, delusion, standing or walking, sitting or lying down. 99% of my life is spent in some combination of those, and thank heaven I have practice to support me as I work with those. And I think that might be it. There's a little verse I want to read, and it sort of relates to some of what I was talking about. And it's, if any of you have attended a Shuso ceremony, this is one of the verses that the Shuso shares at the end of the Hosen Shiki ceremony, or when the Shuso is finished. Friends, if my actions and words have misled you, please wash out your ears in the Dharma's pure, harmonious silence that you can hear in the midst of all sound, within and without. And please keep on with your practice, as I will with mine. Let us continue to practice together throughout this lifetime and in times to come, perfect in our imperfection. So, thank you very much. And Kate or Michael is going to organize the breakouts. Oh, we're going to do the after the Dharma talk. Thank you. We're going to do the after Dharma talk chants and then get into the breakout groups.